ever heard of the Akashic Records? The collective history of all the souls that have ever existed and will ever exist? Good luck trying to find spark notes on that. Feast on this, bookworms. It's Open Loops. Hello, everybody. Greg Bornstein here, your chief looper, consciousness disruptor, cultural hypnotist, and host of Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, conversations that bend. Yes, this is your late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe, most popularly downloaded between 8 and 9 a.m. I'll never understand. But the flavor of this show is all about the possibilities of what could happen at night, because we're not talking about politics, sure, a little bit. We're not talking about entrepreneurship and motivation and simple hoity-toity mainstream podcast themes. We're talking about the opposite of the conscious mind, your unconscious mind. Yes, this is a show where we go into all the topics that take us away from it all. Magic, hypnosis, the paranormal, the supernatural, the conspiratorial, the fringe, the weird, the fantastical, the infinite living mind, and really, the deepest questions of them all, who and what we really are. My goal is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. Now, I don't always like doing repeat topics. I mean, I've done it. I've done the UFO thing a bunch of times and time travelers. But to me, a topic like the Akashic Records, do I really care? Do I really care about this mystical library that is the knowledge source of all wisdom and it's this ethereal concept? You may remember way back a couple months ago, I had Jilly, who was on the show, talking about Jilly Marie. She was talking about her experience reading the records. So when I had Julia Wesley, who's today's guest, lined up, I thought to myself, could this be interesting? Is this going to be more engaging than what I already learned? And then I realized, oh wait, we're talking about the library of everything. Yes, it is a very, very slippery topic. How do you even imagine what that is? I've been to the Strand bookstore. I think they're pretty expensive now. But to me, that was the closest thing to the Akashic Records growing up. My grandfather collected thousands, tens of thousands of books. That felt to me like the Akashic Records. As a matter of fact, my grandfather, Herbert Stearns, was the one that told me about Edgar Cayce initially. I'd heard the name before, but my grandfather, in addition to being a biblical archaeologist and United States historian, though really a historian of everything, he was always fascinated by the paranormal. And he would tell me stories about Edgar Cayce and how Edgar Cayce would look at someone and then go into a trance and identify, just by looking at them in this trance state, any medical malady they had, could prescribe exactly what they needed to get over it, and then that person would be cured. Now, my grandfather, of course. He wasn't as much of a deep dive researcher as I was when it came to these matters. I'm looking at it going, were these just claims? What's the evidence? He wanted to believe, and really left himself to believe a lot more than me. But the point is, I didn't realize at the time that where Edgar Cayce was often going in this trance state was this place called the Akashic Records. So, you know what? Why not try to understand it more? And when you have someone that is as graceful and very entertaining as Julia Wesley, I really like the way she puts things and explains clearly, but also gives a little spunk, gives a little edge, gives a little... Everybody that deals with the Akash is a little rebellious, but Julia has her own flavor of it, which I appreciate. Well, you're going to get a good episode. And this is what this was. We're going to learn about soul alignment, which is always an interesting topic to me as somebody always searching for life purpose. Fascinating topic. Very into it. But Julia really gives us a deep dive view. I didn't realize that this library had guardians. And when you hear the way she describes one of them, hoo boy. We call that an open loop, by the way. I'll tell you what it means later. All right, so we're going to go Akashic. You're going to love it. If you love open loops, or you're interested in having these conversations continue, please make sure to share this podcast, as well as follow it on Apple Podcasts and rate the show and leave a review, even a few words. I'm so grateful. And when I say grateful, you know how they inaccurately depict the indigenous people having Thanksgiving dinner with the pilgrims, and they're all holding hands and it's lovey-dovey and it didn't actually happen? That cartoonish level of gratitude? That's me. Except for real. All right. Let's talk Akashic Records for real. Here she is. Julia Wesley. Tonight on Open Loops, we have Julia Wesley. She is an Akashic Records reader, the host of Becoming Divine. Very interesting what she's doing, Divine Realignment. I'm fascinated by her work. We're going to get into the Akashic Records as well as soul blueprint alignments. I don't know why I had a tough time saying it. Maybe I'm getting realigned as I'm speaking to you. A soul blueprint alignments. I love all of it. Julia, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to talk about this with you.
Yes, 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 yes. You know, the Akashic Records is a very heavy thing. To go all the way there. I mean, some people just talk about their guides. Some people talk about connecting with source, connecting with consciousness. You know, when people really go all the way into, no, you got to know about the records. I always go, wow, that is such a deep thing to hit it in a spiritual journey. Curious, how did the Akashic Records come into your life?
That is an interesting question, because I too thought that the Akashic Records was some sort of weighty, heavy, sort of an attainable place to reach. It seemed like whenever I heard an Akashic Records reader talk about all the work that they had to do, there was like a lot of ritual and procedure, and I was like, whoa. But when I first got into being a spiritual practitioner, doing what I do, I did it through mediumship, but I was a terrible medium because I was never picking up on people's past loved ones. I was always picking up on Akashic information for people. My guides would always show me what I would call their soul blueprint, which is information that I get from your Akashic record, which is basically just the energetic information of who you are or who you are intended to be and expressed in this lifetime. So in a way, I was always sort of in the Akash, and I just didn't know. And it's what comes easiest to me. Being there is simple for me, and trying to do something else, I can do it, but it just doesn't flow as easily.
Yeah. I mean, Julia, this is all very interesting. I'm curious what even, you know, it's rarer to have someone go, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a medium. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're going, yeah, well, maybe this isn't right. You know, you hear stories about people that are picking up on things and they're like, okay, I had no choice. These voices were talking to me. I had to listen to them. I mean, what really compelled you into this line of work? Why did you believe you were a medium in the first place?
Yeah, this is a fun question. So throughout my life, I've always been open to this. I always found it interesting. And even as a kid, I was the kind of kid that freaked my parents out by knowing more than I should have known, being calm in situations that they weren't even calm in, you know, things like that. But I sort of really got into academia and I sort of internally discredited it. And there was a time where I was really struggling with depression and anxiety. And I decided to self-treat and I'm not a doctor, so don't anybody take my advice. But what I did was I just dove into meditation head first. And it was really sort of through Buddhism that I found this, because I started meditating every day, almost religiously. It was just part of my self-care practice. And I remember I would have all of these sort of what I would call like anomalous experiences. I would have like a floating golden orb show up in my room and I would just be like, oh, isn't that nice? And I'd brush it off. And I would have some sort of enormous glowing light in my kitchen and I'd look at it and I'd be like, huh, and then just turn back to the TV. But there was one night where I was meditating and I remember it so clearly. I got some sort of intuitive information from my grandmother. And then I was like, another, I just brush it off again. And then I had one of her guides walk up to me, flick me on the forehead. I felt it. And then I opened up my eyes like, what the heck was that? And then out in front of me, I saw sort of like this, I call it a sparkle, which really doesn't do it justice, but I understand it to be a really concentrated form of consciousness, almost like a how a black hole sort of folds in on itself, but that they're really small, but you can tell that it contains a lot of energy, just feels that way. That I saw that out in front of me. And it was that series of events happening all bam, 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 that I was like, what the heck was that? And then sort of like the stars aligned, it freaked me out enough to be like, learn mediumship near me. And then I had a mediumship workshop coming into the city where I live like 2 weeks from then. And sort of a little funny story, after I bought my ticket and decided to go, my dad was like, hey, can I come visit? And I was like, okay, but you're going to a mediumship workshop with me. And he's like, okay, whatever. And my dad
yeah,
is a medium.
Wait, how did that go over?
it went really well because my dad found out he's a medium. And I decided that mediumship doesn't come as easily to me, but I still wanted to learn this because obviously something's going on here. What is it? And it was through that workshop, and I found someone to mentor with, an evidential medium that I mentored with. And then through that, I was like, I actually feel like I really fit more. I just realized that where I was working was in the Akash.
Now, wait a minute. This is a very fascinating story on a number of levels. One is, I don't think I'm getting my dad to go to a medium class anytime soon. But two, Julia, I mean, my question would be about your kind of belief system in all of this, because you mentioned you came from a traditional academic background. And that is something I know our mutual friend, Victoria Shaw, that's something I asked her a lot about, too. I said, look, something is strange about this. How can you get a PhD in psychology and see the power in healing people, working with people and healing people's emotions, but then all of a sudden really go into this realm that is very hard to believe for, or at least I'll put it this way, a lot of people consciously want to deny their belief in something like this. I mean, is there any precedent in your life did you come from a line of academics? Was there mysticism somewhere? I'm curious about your internal struggle in terms of believing this stuff and how that fit into your journey.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I don't really have a line of mystics behind me or academics behind me. I'm sort of the weirdo of the family, who is helping other people in her family realize that they're also weirdos. But
Yes. Yes. I feel bad.
it, yeah, but so I have always just been a curious person. Even as a kid, I loved learning, and I always was asking questions, and I always felt as if there was sort of like this film or cover over my mind, and it was almost like I could feel it. And I wanted to know, first of all, what is that thing and what's behind it? And it's a really personal experience, right? I don't know if everyone else feels like they've got a shell over their head that's blocking them from something, but I just always knew that wherever I am right now, there's something beyond that. I know it because I feel a block. What is this thing? What is it keeping me from? And it was this time in my life where, as a kid, I was open to it, but as I got more into school, and I didn't take it as far as Victoria. I don't have a PhD. I did college for a few years, and I was like, you know what? I can't keep doing it like this. And so I am a college dropout. But it was during that time when I was like, this thing that I feel as if I know there's more of, but I need proof. And it was the I need proof. I need my own personal experience because you can listen to mediums and psychics talk all day about how they're in communication with the spirit world, but it's sort of meaningless unless you have your own experience. Or at least that's how it was for me.
That's
And
yes, I feel that totally.
yeah. And so what was really interesting to me was this idea of, well, the do it yourself, right? So I come from a Catholic background and I grew up Catholic. I don't identify as Catholic anymore. But one of the things that always bugged me about Catholicism was that your direct line to the divine is a priest. It's not you. And that always bugged me because I was like, this guy's not special. Like, this is just a
Yes,
guy.
yes.
I know him. I'm also not really impressed. And so I was like, what's so special about this guy that's not special about me? Is it just because I'm a woman? You know, is it just what is it? And so I knew that practicing Buddhists and meditation masters and Zen masters even were having all of these transcendent experiences. And I can't get into meditation and float, but I wanted to know that if some experience was possible, can I reach nirvana? Can I get to the spot of enlightenment? Can I sit in meditation? Is meditation real? You know? And it was an easy enough thing for me to try. So I figured, well, why not? Why not see if it works? And I think Buddhism is sort of one of those easier things to get into if you're sort of critically minded or even someone who likes to debunk things.
Oh my
Because,
gosh, this you're telling my story right now. This is crazy.
oh,
Okay,
is
keep
it?
going.
Yeah.
I'm resonating with this. This is very, yeah, I'm with you all the way. Keep going. Yeah, no, I'm with
Yeah.
because I was talking about this the other night with someone. I think it's such a great gateway. I had an acting
Yeah.
teacher in college that said to me, Greg, you definitely need to meditate. You definitely need to be more present. And as somebody that is a atheist, which I was back then, this is going to be a way of connecting with spirit. Just
Yeah.
give these books a read. Boom, something opened up for me. So yeah, I mean, I that's awesome that it seemed to do the same for you.
Yeah, no, well, absolutely. And that was one of those things where I don't like to be told what to do, and two, I issues with authority, surprise, surprise. But I also like
Right.
to be able to have my own. I like to be, if I'm going to claim that something is true, I want to feel it. I want to know it. And the only way I can do that is through experience. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's almost peer reviewed and it has all of these millions, thousands of other people who've done it before you and have also had a similar experience. And the only reason that here in the white Western world that we poo-poo it is because it's not considered to be academic. You know, it's considered to be Eastern mysticism, and that's not fair. You know, and now we
Right.
are studying it, and we are seeing like, oh, well, these people have actually been telling the truth for thousands of years, and it's an easy enough experience to have on your own.
So you study Buddhism, it has an effect on you, and this is something that intrigues me. I'm curious what your take is on this. I was talking to somebody else the other night about this as well. The idea that some people, I believe, meditate and stay in a place where they don't see the ring of light around them, or they don't astral project, they don't experience other outside phenomena that might be classified as paranormal. They simply just get aligned, become one with self, and that is enough of a profound experience for them. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is about you in particular, and even other people, that get so into meditation and then all of a sudden they're channeling an extraterrestrial? I mean, I am curious what your take is on that, because it doesn't happen for everybody, but it does seem to be a path to get there.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think some of it is kind of just an energetic predisposition. I am just sort of a naturally curious kind of a person. So in the beginning, it was just me trying to get in touch with my own energy body, my own emotional body. And so I had a lot of those experiences where I was just trying to touch the void, the one, the all consciousness. And I did do that a few times, and it was sort of mind-blowing. But eventually I was able to sort of step outside of it a little bit, and there's so many people out there who are eager and willing to communicate with you. But why other people do and some don't, I think it has to do with how open you are. Everyone can meditate, but you know, some people are seeing dead people at the foot of their bed and some people aren't. And as someone who works in what I would call your soul blueprint very often in the Akash, there are some people whose whole mission here is to be of spiritual service to others. And so it's easier for them to get that help, you know, like, I'm connecting with your angels and they have this to tell you, or I'm sort of getting this sense that there's something going on with your shoulder. Like, what is that? And it's just another tool in the toolbox, I would say. And it's taking it even a little farther doing what I'm doing, because people can go into meditation and get great spiritual insight for themselves or for other people, but they maybe don't only want to do that in life, you know? So I just think it's sort of, we're talking about degrees of openness and degrees of curiosity. And sometimes people are just satisfied just sitting and, you know, like marinating in the divine love that all of us have access to. And that's enough for them. And I, you know, personally, it kind of is enough. But if you're curious like me, you want to know if there's anything at, like, what else is there, you know?
Yeah, that is interesting. I love that. I love that the curiosity prompts even more of these phenomena to happen. And I want to take you back for a second. You got to tell me what the mind-blowing experience of being with source consciousness was. I mean, what does that feel like? That must be amazing. Was there a moment? Can you describe it at all? Why is it mind-blowing as much as it was?
It was timelessness. So I was just sitting in meditation, and it was this Muji meditation, Nothing Here But You. And I had done it a couple times, but this one time I was like, oh, this is clicking. And I thought that I was just, you know, meditating. I was like, oh, well, maybe it's been, I don't know, 15 minutes. That has to be like a record. And I opened my eyes and I looked at the clock and it had been 40 minutes. And I was like, no way. And that sort of blew my mind, because you're just sort of floating in this bliss. And that's all my experience was, and maybe that was all I needed. Maybe someone else's experience is different. I don't really know, but that was mine. I was just sitting in this bliss, and I had everything I needed. I didn't need anything else. It was sort of my sitting under the Bodhi tree moment, and I was like, all right, something's going on here. You know, like, this is something.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds awesome. Every single guest that talks about this kind of work, this consciousness expanding work, always comes back to meditation, and certainly makes me buy into it as a powerful, powerful practice more and more. Just not even to fix anything, just to get the most out of life. My gosh, people talk about traveling. I love traveling, but no one's going, I love going inside and traveling.
Oh, yeah.
That would be much more interesting to me to meet someone like that. I mean, that's why I started this show. but yeah, that's so cool. And then, so you're talking about becoming a medium, and mm-hmm. then you discover that you're tapping into something else. Now, what are some of the, what were some of the early memories or examples of the things you were picking up on that were akashic, if you will?
Oh, that's a really good question. I was just talking about this with a friend the other day about, like, what's your earliest experience? And I would like to say that, you know, from a very early age, I was talking about aliens and whatnot, but I really wasn't. I just sort of operated in this understanding that everything is okay, you know? And I had such a firm belief in that as a kid, which is just, you know, it's strange. And
yes,
I was a really great dreamer. I remember having dreams of people I hadn't met. And looking back on these dreams, I was like, that was definitely a dead person. Like, I was definitely doing dream work. You know, there were people who wanted me to help them move on. But at the time, I'm like, man, like, I'm 4. Like, what do you want from me? Like, I can't help you, you know? And so to a certain degree, I just didn't have those types of experiences because it sounds weird, you know, saying that as a kid I knew, but as a kid I knew, like, it's not the right time. Like, I can't help you the way that you need help. And when you're a medium, especially as a kid, like, your light is, I hesitate to say bright, but it is. Like, non-corporeal beings know when you know they're there. And there's just a difference in your energy. And so I would say that's probably the earliest experiences. The ones that just really stick out to me is being able to, like, walk into a room and manifest something. I'd walk into a room and win a prize. And, you know, and my mom would be like, did you even enter that raffle? And I'm like, of course I didn't. I'm 8. And it was just things like that where it was like weird little synchronicities. And it's just enough for me to know that there's something's going on, right? Like, what's happening here? But I would say it really started ramping up again, maybe around middle school, because that's sort of when I became aware that I had been sort of feeling other people's emotions in my own body, sort of doing that empath thing. And that really sparked my curiosity for it again. And then that was actually the first time I heard of the Akashic Records. And that was when I had my curiosity piqued for it. But, you know, then I never really took it seriously until I was, like, a full-grown adult.
And, yeah. What was it for you? Was it Edgar Cayce?
Actually, it was Anna Stacey, who is an Akashic Records reader. And it was the first time I had heard of just the Akashic Records. And I don't know if she's not as big as Edgar Cayce is, but it was just this interesting idea of, like, soul groups and, you know, like, how many different lives have you had? And I was like, well, what's all this? Like, it's like a hidden library that no one told me existed. Who's keeping this from me? I love to read. And so I was like, you mean there's more information out there? And I didn't know about it. So that's what got me.
Yes, it makes me think of Belle and Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
And what would it be like if she knew about all this? I mean,
God.
But there's an even better library. I mean, that is it. Okay, look, I have to ask. I'm sure it's the question you get all the time, but it's an important question from someone that practices it. For someone that has no idea what the Akashic Records are, what's the way you'd put it to it? Put it to them.
So there are a couple ways to think about it. If you're kind of old school, it's like this giant cosmic library that holds all of the information of what has been, what might have been, what can be, what will be, and what's happening now. And so it's just this unimaginably massive hoard of information. Or you can sort of think about it, because it's not an actual physical place, it's sort of like the cloud, where all of that information is uploaded, and when you're looking for some sort of certain information, you can kind of download it and, you know, get it that way. but it's like the universe's cloud.
That is, and you know what? Yeah, that cloud metaphor is great. It's interesting that technology reflects things that have spiritually been talked about for thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I personally think, well, we're only using the terminology that we have to talk about concepts that have existed forever. So, you know, library was the best word that we had for it. And I think cloud is probably the best representation for what it actually is. Some people, when they go into the Akash, they see it as an actual hall of records. Sometimes they see it as like scrolls or, you know, anything like that, just because in their head, that's what it's supposed to look like. But personally, when I go in, I don't necessarily go into a hall. I just sort of, to me, it's sort of like the void. And I just sort of, I go there. Or I ask a guide to get a specific bit of information for me, an Akashic guide. And then they bring that back to me. But I have a hard time recognizing it as a bunch of books just because you can get this Akashic information from anywhere you are. You know, like you don't have to search for a specific book. To me, it just seems like an extra little bit of protocol that just doesn't help me. But some people, they're like, oh no, I found this really old dusty scroll. And I'm like, that sounds really awesome. Like, I think it's fun to hear how all these other people access the Akash, because it's a cool place. And it's really a reflection of you, the way that you see it.
That is an interesting idea, just in terms of the way that people interpret tarot is always different. You hear about cards resonating with the reader more, or the certain spreads being reflective of what that person impulsively feels in that moment. I've never heard about the Akashic Records or thought about it in terms of a unique expression of the reader themselves, which makes me wonder, you know, it is very hard to grasp. Here, okay, let me ask you some. This is going to be some. Let me do some thought experiments, and I'm curious what your take is on this.
Sure.
Do you think the Akashic Records are creating the version of the Akashic Records that you're meant to experience?
Yes. I do think that. So it's everyone can get into the Akashic Records, but not everyone really should be. I am not a fan of gatekeeping, but I am a fan of quality control. And so you do have the ability to sort of mess up a record, or at least your experience of it. And that has reverberations.
When does that happen? Give me an example. Who's messing up the library?
So you can. There are sections of time and in history that the guardians of the records don't necessarily let you dig around in. Just because it's a convoluted timeline to begin with, there's been a lot of pain and suffering there, and putting your fingers in that pie is not helpful. So I don't know of anyone in specific, but there are periods of time like, you know, like stay out of World War II, you know, there are like really ancient,
Now, wait a minute. This is fascinating. This is very different than what I've ever heard about the Akashic Records.
Oh, really?
How did you? Yeah, no, or at least, and again, I'm not too well researched in it, but I've never heard this idea of gatekeepers in specific time blocks. I mean, how did you learn about this? Did you encounter them firsthand? Are you picking up on? I mean, because you could argue, you know, some people are. There were a lot of people that were talking about 2020. A lot of people talking about 2020 as a time of, and this is where it gets confusing. I'm going, well, what did the gatekeepers say? People were talking about how, certainly with the last election in the United States, not to go too deep down that rabbit hole, but they were talking about a timeline split, and now they're two separate timelines. And then people were talking about 2020 as the actual 2012 and this kind of multiple timeline. But like, it seemed like it was a very loaded time for humanity this past year. So I can imagine the gatekeepers have some thoughts on that. So I guess the idea of a spiritual concentration around a certain period of time has precedent, but I'm curious, how do you know about these? How did you encounter it?
So and it's just sort of like a difference in terms, but I wouldn't call them gatekeepers so much as like guardians and caretakers.
The guardians, yes.
And the reason why is just because there's a certain amount of healing that needs to be done during this timeline in this one specific now moment, right? And so when we keep fiddling with it, it's like picking at a scab. And so I guess the way that I came to it was my own work in the records. And typically when a record has been healed or when a client that I'm working with, like they're done with that record, if I try and go back into that record, I can't open it again because their guides and my guides and the work that I do is like, we're done here. We have to stop messing with it. So you can't get back into it. And there are these really convoluted crisscrossing timelines that converge in certain spots. I keep getting drawn back to Atlantis. And I really think that there's a lot of writing out there. There's a lot of people open and willing to talk about Atlantis. And I would take all of it with a grain of salt. I'm not saying that all of it's not true, but there are so many different timelines of that one experience that people are tuning into that you can't just take one bit of information and call it the definitive proof, right? And it is just something that in my work there, I've kind of like come across it. I've never had someone be like, wag their finger at me and tell me that I can't do that just because it's sort of a sense that you get. If you're working in the Akash, you are inevitably working with time. And you can sort of be like, ooh, that's a knotty little Gordian knot that you have there with time. And so you just give it its birth. But if you're new to the Akash and you're super excited about being there and you're like, give me all the information about everything and you just want to know about, tell me about the, you know, Library of Alexandria, or tell me about, you know, this like really momentous, perhaps excruciatingly painful time in history, and you're not paying attention to the energy around that and the resonance of it, they'll give you some information, right? Because it's your birthright to know these things, and they're not going to keep it from you, but they're not going to give you unfettered access to it. So you'll more likely get an overview or the information that's best for you at this time. They're not just going to lay it all on you, you know, because knowledge is power.
Yeah. And tell me this, I mean, as a learner, mm-hmm. as somebody that, you know, I definitely know that I mean, I go into a used bookstore and I get that feeling of excitement of endless possibilities. You know, when people talk about spirituality a lot, I get the sense that it can be a little intangible by design, mm-hmm. in some ways, but in the sense that they're picking up on feeling senses and then translating it into words. And I'm going, yeah, mm-hmm. you know what? A lot. It'd be great to read this energy, but also a lot of people have poured a lot of time into some pretty great pieces of literature. I think I'm going to get more intellectually stimulated by picking up a book. In your experience in the Akashic Records, I mean, What is it like to read those books? Do you get stimulated in that same way, or is it even more stimulating? What kind of knowledge are you actually picking up?
Yeah, so the knowledge that I get in the Akash is just things that I particularly find interesting. So I work a lot in helping people understand themselves. And I really do is I help people disconnect from what they would consider to be their past lives. And I help people let go of what they think is their karma. And I help them move forward and express themselves as they were intended to be in this lifetime from their original blueprint. And so a lot of the information that I work with is archetypal. What are your archetypes? Are you expressing in this life? What ones are false for you? What can you let go of? So I get a lot of information about, and this is where it's going to get even weirder. I get a lot of information about life on other star systems, and I get a lot of information. Awesome. Yeah, I get a lot of information about different periods and times in history, and I get a lot of information about I guess what could be the future. And just as an aside, fortune telling is not something that I'm a big fan of because, you know, you can change your future like now. Right. Any time, you know, if you decide that you don't like where this is going, if you sink into the now moment, you can choose a new path. And so that's the kind of stuff that I get into. What was that other life like? You know, like what are you trying to learn from it? That kind of a thing. And when I get that information, it's just so exciting. I'm such a nerd. I love to learn. I love it. It's like a whole bunch of little mysteries. And anytime I get access to a mystery and then I get the answer, I'm like, ooh, I want another one. You know, so as an Akashic Records reader, the more that you sort of devote yourself to this work, the more I would, for lack of a better term, I would say access you have to this information because you've opened yourself up to the work. So some of it is really wild and crazy, and we can go down a lot of wormholes that way. But some of it is really, practical. And one of the very first things that they taught me, because in my own studying of the Akash, because I had to take a formal class, my guides told me that I didn't have any past lives, and they told me that I didn't have any karma. And I was sort of disappointed because I'm like, well, that's a letdown, you know, like I wanted to know all about what my past lives were, and you're telling me I have none. And then they were also telling me these things about the ego and how I was under the impression that you're supposed to get rid of that thing. But they were telling me that, no, your ego's a way for the universe to expand and to learn about itself. And you just need to heal it and all this other stuff. And so it's not just this really strange esoteric information that you get in the Akash that you're just like, well, how does that apply to life here? There's also a lot of how can we best be human? Like, what was the original intent of humanity? Like, how can we get back to that? And so, again, the Akash is the reflection of the reader. So you can get that really sort of like strange information that you have no idea what to do with, or you can get this really like grounded information about, well, how can I live my life, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, it's fascinating. I love the idea of nerding out in the Akashic Records. Mm-hmm. That's kind of it's a very unique spin on the whole thing. And it makes me wonder. I mean, look, you mentioned you were in this course. This is what intrigues me, and it makes me go, okay, there's got to be something else going on here, because it used to be that psychics, mediums, people that practice this stuff were, yes, they may have come down from a tradition, but when you see them mm-hmm. out in society, you're going, well, I mean, I know this being in New York City, I could walk down 14th Street, walk into a psychic's space, get a reading, then go to 15th Street and get a completely different reading. Mm-hmm. And you're going, well, and that kind of leads the skepticism, makes me go, okay, yeah. Well, who do you trust if everybody's giving me different interpretations? But when you're taking classes on this, I mean, and someone's certifying it in you, I can't imagine that there wouldn't be synchronistic experiences. I mean, I'm curious, have you had a lot of times where you're picking up on something and other people are picking up on it too, and that just solidifies the power of this? I mean, what is some of your, for people out there that are going, okay, what is she talking about? what are some times where it's really come through as solid?
Yeah, you know, probably when you're first starting out on this and you're like, is this a real thing? You know, getting many other people who get the same result as you do is gratifying, you know, like any science experiment. You're sort of like, okay, everyone else is getting the same thing. I must not have screwed up. And that's really exciting. What is probably the best evidence, though, is when something comes through and someone's like, that's my grandma. Or they're like, that happened to me yesterday. And thank you so much for clarifying that. If I'm going to think of one specific thing, though, pertaining to the Akash. So I guess first I should talk about why people get differing results, because that's going to happen. And in specific, when you're talking about an Akashic Records reading, because when you go and you get an Akashic Records reading and you get, like, let's say three within a 3-month period, there's a chance that they may all give you the same information. But there's also an equal chance that one or two of them are going to give you something completely different. And it has a lot to do with the reader. They're going to pick up on the symbol or the metaphor even that best fits the information that they're trying to relay. So someone could say, oh, well, you're a starseed and you're from the Pleiades. And then you could get another one who's like, oh, you know, you're a starseed and you're from Venus. That's not really one, but that's just an example. Right, and what they're trying to get across is that, oh, you're very heart-centered. You know, like you really hold this archetype within you. And so that's why it's it can't really be studied in this way, right? Because every reader is different. But when you're working in the Akash and all of your guides know that, you know, you all need to pick me up. You all need to know that what you're doing is real. When you practice together and you're like, okay, well, let's try and figure out this person's soul group and maybe their soul training. And I was in this time when I was like, oh, yeah, this is this person's soul group. I just know it is. And like three other people get the same result. And you're like, okay, I guess like, you know, we didn't get together and agree on this. You know, this just all individually happened. And that's always fun. Yeah, I hope that answers that question.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's tough to, I'm sure you've been in and out of there so many times that there are a lot of things that just, you know, they're synchronicities. I think that's kind of the odd thing that about the Akashic Records that I keep hearing is that you pick up on things. Akashic Records people really pick up on things that nobody could ever know otherwise. Yeah, is that your experience?
Yeah, I guess one of the, I guess you could say weird things about me. Other people have told me this is weird, but I didn't realize it was weird until anyone told me. I can sometimes look at someone and just know what their soul group of origin is. And it's not something that I have to struggle for, you know, because sometimes a lot of people have to go deep into meditation, do their procedure work, do their rituals and walk into the Akash, pick up somebody's specific record and just boom. And then they know. But that's one of the things that comes really easily to me. I can just get the impression of someone's primary soul group. And if you're looking for an interesting story, there was one time I was watching a documentary and for some reason I was just focused on this one guy and I was like, what? And then I kept getting some sort of, it was a completely new soul group that I had never known of before. And I just got that from looking at this guy off a documentary. I didn't even have to see him in person. And so that has got to be one of the weirder things that's happened to me, just being a kind of an Akashic person is like, it's cool, right? Because it helps you realize that because it's a non-physical dimension, the Akash is kind of everywhere. You know, you're never not really in it. And so that was a fun thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you're doing the Akashic Records and then all of a sudden the soul blueprint comes into it. Yes. Soul blueprint alignment. Mm-hmm. What in the world is that? How did that get birth of this?
So actually the soul blueprint alignments came first. The soul blueprints were what was coming through to me when I was studying to be a medium. And I would pick up on people's past loved ones if they were acting as a guide for them. But really what I would be like is, hey, let's talk about your purpose. You've kind of gotten off track and your guys want to talk about how we can get you back on your path, how we can get you living back in alignment with who you are. And that was one of the things that sort of mystified my mentor. She's like, are you sure you don't want to talk about their aunt? Like their aunt's here. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to talk about their aunt. I want to talk about their purpose. And it took me until actually I took that Akashic Records course for me to recognize that the information I was getting when I was trying to learn mediumship was information that you typically get by going into the Akash. And what it is I sort of see people energetically as kind of a grid. I see them as like a grid pattern. And I guess the way that it is, it's sort of like the 2D representation of the 3D you, you know, and it's just easier for me to read that 2D grid. And that information is stored in your record in the Akash. And when I'm working on that with you, a lot of the times we have what I call false overlays, false beliefs of who we are. And so we put that over our original blueprint, our original grid, and it confuses the issue. It feels sort of staticky. You feel a little bit directionless in your life, and life feels kind of foggy. And that's because you're dealing with that static. You've put those lines where they're not supposed to be. And so a lot of the time when I'm working with someone's blueprint, I'm helping them see what's underneath that crap that they put over themselves. And I'm like, do you see this about yourself? Like, this is who you are. This feels good because this is you. This is a potential that you can express if you let go of these other parts of you that aren't you. And that's Akashic information. That's what that is, because I'm going back to the point of origination for that little bit of consciousness. And that's timeline work, which is inherently Akashic. And that's what that is.
Are you the person that I've been looking for, in the sense that, or at least I was looking for, and here's what I mean. Years ago, I was searching for people that would help me find my purpose. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I'm still on that journey. I believe the Greg Bornstein I'm meant to fully be hasn't been realized yet, and that I've talked to a lot of people on the show and outside of the show, and I think this is a stepping stone in that journey. But certainly a few years back, I was talking to people that were psychic, supposedly, and speaking to different mental health practitioners and hypnotists and whatnot, and all things that I personally am intellectually fascinated anyways, when I'm going, okay, well, you know what? Help me get a purpose here. What's mm-hmm. my purpose? What I'm supposed to do? Are you actually guiding people that have no clue what they're meant to do into a sense of alignment?
Yes, essentially that's what it is. And when you're talking about something like a purpose, because when I figured out that this is what I was doing, I was like, great. You know, I was like, I tried to pump my guides for information about what's my purpose? Who am I? You know, I was expecting sort of like a title, you know, like, oh, be a banker. And what my guides gave me was just a bunch of qualities of who I was. And I was like, well, that's like a cop out, you know, like, tell me. And they're like, you're not a category. You're not a title. You are these qualities. And what is your mission, so to say, if you want to take it on that way, is to find something in this 3D reality that is a best fit for you. So, you know, maybe a lot of my experience has been customer service experience, and that's because I'm really great at relating to people and I meet them on that level. And that was fulfilling that sort of need that I had to express my purpose at that time. And when you sink further and further into who you are and you're more able to express who you are, your purpose grows and expands with you. So right now, maybe a perfect alignment for you is being a podcaster and doing this questing that you're doing. But the more you get into that and the better you get at it, so to say, it will expand, right? So the cool thing about your purpose is that very rarely is anyone ever just, you know, like a firefighter. Sometimes maybe they'll expand beyond that, or maybe their goals will change and shift as they sink deeper and deeper into who they are. And, Yeah, it's one of the examples I like to give are nurses, and it's probably a good example now, but I have a relative who's a nurse, and it's a good fit for her because she is a nurse every day of her life, even when she's not on the clock, right? So that's why they were giving me like, oh, this is your quality, right? Because it's like, this is what you express all of the time. And if you find a job that fits that exactly, then great. But we're not going to tell you, you know, that it's your duty to be a cheesemonger in this life, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So then when you're working with people, how much do you need to know about them in order to start tapping into this?
Nothing. I just need them to be willing and then to sit in front of me because I'm not reading them per se. I'm getting this information from their guides. And so reading them, if they're not fully in alignment with who they are, I may be picking up on the false overlays. So I don't need any information. I don't even really need their name. I just need them to have shown up.
What? And then what happens after? Are they going, wow, now I know what to do with my life? I mean, what kind of results do people get after a soul blueprint alignment?
I get a lot of great feedback about it. It is hopefully to help clear people's minds on who they are and what it is that they're here to do, right? I don't necessarily, you know, I can't say, oh, after this, you're going to get a job offer with me. But I can say, hey, this is where you should be focusing your attention because this is who you are. I help people see who they are, essentially. And that helps them drop this false impression of who they think they are. I've had a lot of people tell me that it's sort of changed the trajectory of their life because it reminded them of their connection to the divine just through themselves. And it reminded them that they're here for a reason. You know, everyone's here for a reason. You know, it's not an accident that we're here. That's the response that I get from it.
That is wild stuff. First of all, why weren't you? You should be a middle school guidance counselor. We need people like you and those kids.
Yeah, right.
That would be amazing. But also, really, this is a very interesting thing to tap into. And I guess I wonder, in terms of the view of life in general. I mean, look, we see. And I know this from the world of being in the corporate world and being among people that are in different lines of work, whether that's in show business or software company or just really doctors. I mean, all sorts of industries have surrounded me my whole life. And there's been a time where I've been going, are they met? Is everybody? Where's everybody at collectively? I guess I sometimes go because sometimes I'm going, is this always the highest thing this person wants to do? Or are they here to do something more? But I also don't sit here and go, I don't think everybody's meant to be this cosmic, high consciousness, spiritual being in their work as well. But then again, these are the forms that we've been given. These are the jobs that have been created. This is what society's set up. So without destroying and upending society completely, Julia, how do you believe that everybody is meant to ascend to their highest sense of self in a very practical way?
Yeah, man, you just keep throwing me softballs, don't you? So
sorry, I know it's not fun. But you have access to the library. That's why. I mean, come on.
Yeah, okay. So how can everyone individually ascend in the most practical way is what you're asking?
I guess that's tough. How do you see that it's possible for everybody to be in alignment in a way that doesn't completely destroy all of society?
So I guess it's a little bit of a bind, that question, because we do have to break it a little bit in order to get there. Some things are not working. Some things do work, but a lot of things don't. Society, as we have it set up right now, is not really fit to serve people. It's fit to serve certain people and certain groups of people. But what I'm really getting at with that is that there aren't very many systems in place to help people express who they are. And we see a little bit of that changing now in society. And I guess it would come down to the understanding of what makes you happiest in life. Because you're right, not everyone is going to be a famous actor, or not everyone's going to assume the top position in their field. And that's because not everybody wants to, you know? If people are going to get real about what it is that they want, it means that they have to go inside. They have to go internally and to connect with the truth of who they are, which is why I only focus on these two readings, the Akashic readings and the Soul Blueprint readings, because if you go deep enough into who you are, you actually recognize and you touch the divine within you, and you recognize it outside of you as well. And then expressing that little fractal of divine that you are in your own unique way, your special snowflake way, then you're living in alignment with the truth. You're living in alignment with your fullest ascension, for lack of a better term. So for some people, that's going to look like being a stay-at-home dad, because the best you is an excellent caretaker and thrives at taking care of their family and their loved ones, and that is where they fit best. And some people, that's going to look like being a CFO. And some people, that's going to look like being, you know, a salesperson, because when they are being true to themselves and they're expressing themselves to their fullest potential, they're really great at, you know, connecting with people and helping people get their needs met. And, oh, I have something that'll get this need met. And so it's an interesting question, because it involves both breaking society a little bit and then helping people understand that you have to go in. You have to go into yourself, so deep into yourself that you don't know where you stop and something else begins. That seems kind of like a convoluted answer now that I've said it, but it's the best one I have.
Hey, that's totally fine. I'm just still fascinated by these guardians. What do they look like? Have you seen a guardian?
I do see them. So there are many different beings within the universe. So some of them, I see them as just energy beings, and some of them are present more physical. One being that I'm working with really right now is sort of this mantis being, which sort of looks like this, like a Zen Buddhist master, but if he was a praying mantis, is kind of what that looks like to me. They can look like Pleiadians. They can look like your Aunt Jo. They can look like anything. It has more to do with their matrix, their complex, which is why they're there. And they can look like anything.
Do other people see them? Do other people see similar beings? I mean, obviously there is mm-hmm. this filtration through your unique relationship to the Akashic Records, but I'm curious if similar archetypes have shown up for other readers.
Yeah. So it's really common, especially when you're first getting into the Akash, to deal with specific guides. So there are a lot of these like scribe archetypes, you know, like ancient scribe gods like Hermes and I'm going to say his name wrong. I'm going to sound like an idiot. Thoth or Toth.
Oh,
or
Thoth. Yeah, people probably pronounce it different ways.
Yeah. And so it's really common to see energies like that, or you'll see an archangel, or you'll see, you know, it's just what guide best serves you. And oftentimes when you get in there enough and you do the work that I do, those guides change. And there are millions of, it's probably more accurate to call them librarians, that are just sort of wandering the halls and putting things back where they belong, or taking out books for people and giving them to people, and just sort of dealing with the upkeep. And so anything that you can imagine and anything that you can't imagine exists within the Akash.
Oh my gosh. Have you accidentally ever stumbled into something that they didn't want you to see?
No, but I have accidentally stumbled into something that I didn't know I could see. That was it. So sometimes when you do this work enough and you really start to like specialize in what it is that you do, and they start giving you access to more information that they're like, here, this will help you with your purpose. And you're like, whoa, you know, I've never happened upon something that I wasn't supposed to see, because it's not really like that. It's more or less like, okay, you know it's there, but let me gently guide you towards something that is better for you. And usually you'll forget all about that thing that you weren't quote unquote supposed to see, because you're going to be absorbed with this thing that is a better fit for you because it's more fun. Yeah.
Oh, they're kind of like ringmasters, causing like, hey, look at this over here, look over here.
Kind of. Well, you have to kind of understand from the human mindset, we're not like troglodytes, but we're for lack of a better word, unevolved in a way. And so if we accidentally stumble upon something, they just gently guide you, sort of like a bunch of toddlers loose in a craft room is how they kind of treat it, you know, with infinite love. But they're like, oh, put the scissors down and let's play with the crayons, you know.
Right, right. Now, wait a minute. This is the thing, though. You told me at the beginning you were a rebel, in an intellectual rebel. So here's what I'm saying. If my question is this, if they're telling you don't look at 1944 or that period of World War II, I believe Julia Wesley is going to do everything she can to get in there. I mean, are they tempting you more by doing this, Julia?
So depending on who you are, if you stumble upon something you're not supposed to see, it's probably because you're supposed to see it. You know, it's probably because they're trying to get you curious about something. So if I were to stumble upon 1944, it's probably because I can help in some way. But if I were to genuinely stumble upon something that just I can't help and it can't help me, then you're not sort of allowed to roam unwatched, really, or unguided without, you know, a buddy, if you're not holding sort of the right intention. So I can honestly say for myself, if I were to stumble upon a wound and I can feel the pain coming from it, from that really traumatic point in history, I know it's best not to poke at it, you know, because my intention is for, you know, the healing of everyone. And even if I were to like dive into a timeline that really I'm not supposed to see or no one's supposed to go into, it's going to be so chaotic, you know, that you're not going to get anything useful. You're just going to probably get something a little disturbing and you're going to come out of it wishing you didn't do it, you know? So that's really what it is. And I still am a rebel. I still claim it. But in terms of what I can access in the Akash, it's more or less, I'm an intellectual rebel against what I am, what's supposed to be legitimate in human eyes, you know, rather than what is legitimate in spiritual eyes. Because if you're listening to this right now and you're like, well, that just sounds like they're trying to keep information from you, I get it, you know, but I don't know how to tell you you're wrong, because I would have thought the same thing. But at the same time, like, I'm in the Akash a lot. Like, I know what it feels like, and I know what pain in that respect feels like. And so I know where I'm not needed, I guess, is the difference between.
What happens? Are your eyes closed? Can you do it with your eyes open? Like, what is the experience?
Either. So sometimes it's more helpful to do it with my eyes closed, and sometimes I can do it with my eyes open but sort of unfocused.
It's like trance.
Yeah. Like I mean, I'm there right now and I'm sort of looking off into the middle distance, and what it is I just sort of get this mental understanding or impression. And sometimes I get a really vivid clairvoyant image of what it is that I'm seeing. But a lot of what I do when I bring it back down to earth, for lack of a better phrase, I'm channeling that information. So it's not like I've picked up a book and I'm reading it, because that's too much work for me. Like, I would rather just channel the information. That's just easier. So that's what that's like. But I do know people who have this like amazing sort of like journeying experience into the Akash, where it's all like hyper realistic and they see all these vivid colors. And I'm like, that sounds like really cool. But that's not my experience.
Yeah. Do you think there's knowledge in the Akashic records about how you could have that experience?
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
This is interesting. I mean, you're the first person I've ever heard that kind of has hinted at just hanging out of the Akashic records recreationally. you're not necessarily doing it to just work with people. You're going, you know what? I'm going in here. I want to learn something today.
Yeah. Work is fun for me. So I'm there as often as I can be, because I truly find it fascinating. And it should feel like play. You know, all spiritual work really should feel like play, in my opinion.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I would love to, I want to visit this place. I mean, I wonder if, if you're not, I guess the thing I'm trying to wrap my head around is, if you're not helping yourself raise your consciousness, that if you're not working with others, what are you getting out of hanging out in the Akashic records? Are there romance novels? I mean, what is what kind of experiences do you have when it's really just kind of you poking around at the records of all of time?
Yeah, you're really not going to get anything out of it, to be honest. There's really nothing for you there if you're just out there sort of like, well, what's this? You're not going to get anything, to be honest. When you go into the Akash, you do have to go in with this expectation that I'm here to serve.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
And because you'll have a hard time accessing information if you don't have that right intention, because it's sort of like getting into the correct alignment, right? It's sort of like when you have two pictures or two images and you're trying to get them to focus into one single image, right? So they're sort of like, or binoculars that you're trying to get tuned correctly, you know? And when you're in the wrong intention, you might be in the Akash, but it's not a great enough fit for you to get anything useful or interesting. So when you're in the Akash and I'm in the Akash for either myself or for someone else, it's to get information that's going to be the most useful for them. So I am in there a lot just to study and to learn, because that's part of my purpose and my mission. But my larger purpose and mission is to help. So that's why it's so easy for me to access.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, do you, when you mentioned going to Greece or somewhere in a different time period, I'm wondering, what is the mindset of serving there? How do they go, okay, she's not just going on a vacation here, she's actually serving humanity? I mean, what is actually running through your head?
Yeah, so I guess it's when I get that information, typically I'm doing it for someone else. Because I don't claim any past lives as my own, so I wouldn't be able to do that really for myself. But when I go for other people, I typically have the permission of the person that I'm reading and the permission of the guides that we're working with. And so getting that information and accessing it is really simple and easy, typically because they have already pre-pulled that information for me. And I don't have to go looking for it myself. I could go looking for it myself, and it would be with sort of like open curiosity, no judgment. And that's a really great way to, if you're in the Akash, open curiosity, no judgment is a great way to get information, because you're not going to color the information that you get. If you're just open to what that is, you're going to get the most accurate impression of what that time period is. So it just has a lot to do with, and I'm going to sound corny, but the frequency of love, how well you're holding it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, hey, it does sound corny, but it's also in a world that needs more of love. I mean, do you have a different understanding of what are the Akashic records telling you right now that would be a really easy thing for everyone to do to just get more in a place where we could all raise our vibration?
Yeah, the number one thing that they always tell me about this is to just get into better alignment with who you are. And the reason why that is so hard is because there's so much pain in the way of who you really are. So a lot of us are expressing as we think we're supposed to express. So we're not being honest with ourselves. We're not being honest with other people. We're feeling emotions that we're not expressing. And those things get in the way from you accessing your own records, which we all have the ability to do. And if you want to help humanity, if you want to help move things forward, it's going to require sort of a radical honesty with yourself and with other people. Because we can't really move forward without it. We're just all sort of living living on a sand foundation in this respect, where we're just all creating a life in a world that doesn't actually serve who we actually are. And the reason I say you can access your own records is because you can. And the only way you can really do that is if you're willing to open up to the truth of who you are. And I actually encourage everyone to try and access their own records. It's your record. So by default, you have rights to it. And the best way to do that, if you're a meditating person, is to get into meditation and start like really getting into how you feel, who you are, what it is that you're feeling right this very moment, and just observing it. And getting into that habit and is going to be good enough. You may not have a technicolor experience of the Akash and you don't need it, but you're going to know that you're in your own record when you're in alignment with who you are.
Yes. And also, everybody out there listening, if you are interested in stepping into this power that you have accessing the Akashic Records, I imagine one of the best ways to do it is to, check out your podcast. I mean, you're talking about all this stuff, Becoming Divine, which is available on all the podcast platform. I mean, already you're talking to, we mentioned Victoria Shaw. She was on an early episode of this, but you're talking to really interesting people that are not just Akashic people. I mean, law of attraction experts, people who, relationships, I mean, people in all different mediums, different kinds of fields that are all pointing to this truth, which is great, as well as working with you. I mean, hey, if you have a soul alignment, a soul blueprint reading, I'm mixing it all up, soul blueprint alignment or an Akashic Records reading, I imagine that is a significant step based on at least what people seem to be saying. You have a lot of good testimonials here. People that work with you, they seem to walk away going, yeah, I feel much more empowered. I feel much more in my sense of self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So the first season of Becoming Divine, I can't remember if the last episode of the first season is out now or if the next to last one is out now, but definitely check that out, because the first one is all about helping you be human, helping you be the you that you are. And I'm working on the second season right now, and I'm going to get more in depth about past lives and karma and accessing the Akash and why you even should, why you should care, that kind of stuff. And if you're interested in sort of clearing up your own record and your own karma and figuring out who you are, I'd love to work with you. It's
Yeah.
One of my favorite things to do.
Well, we'll definitely link to all of that, as well as your website, which is divinerealignment.com. That's divinerealignment.com. Before you go, Julia, here's my question for you. Do the Akashic Records, look, the Akashic Records are everything. They're all of time. They're the cloud. But as we know from the internet, even the cloud sits in something. It's a bunch of servers somewhere. So here's my question. If the Akashic Records are everything, where do the Akashic Records fit in? What's above that?
That's interesting. The way I perceive it, the Akash sort of sits in the, they start at least in the eighth dimension. Now, all of the dimensions touch and interlock and interconnect, but it's really a non-physical sort of place. And it's just, I call it sort of the imprint of everything that has ever happened. It's like the, you know how the universe has background radiation?
Yes.
From the creation of it. That to me is sort of the physical representation of what the Akash is. That background radiation is the imprint of the creation of the universe and of what's happening now. It's capturing it. It's recording it. It's remembering it. And if you can get into a place where you can access sort of that, it's sort of an in-between sort of space. That's where it is. And where does it fit within the all? It's sort of a created space. Because in my understanding, God is all, right? And there's nothing really outside of it. Then it's sort of, we don't need, because God is everything and God wouldn't really need to remember. It's really for us, for these people or these beings who needed to have some place to go to where that information could be stored for them and they wouldn't have to know it all the time. So, yeah, that's my kind of non-answer for you.
Yeah. Well, look, we don't expect you to have all the answers. I mean, this is, but you definitely seem to have some pretty good ones about this. I mean, I appreciate how much you're able to clarify a lot of concepts that seem pretty hard to understand. I think it's all very interesting what you're doing, Julia, and I definitely appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk about it.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on. Thank you for asking really interesting and great insightful questions. I really appreciated being here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Julia Wesley, thanks so much for coming on. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank you. I told you, I'm Cartoon Pilgrim grateful for you. And, you know, really what it comes down to is this. Did Jeff Bezos recreate the Akashic Records just for material goods? Think on that one for a while. I'll probably go purchase a few books on this topic for my Kindle later this afternoon. All right, everybody. Much love. Take care.